Slut's Guide to Happiness, where your body is perfectly imperfect and it's safe to be as sexual, kinky, queer, or slutty as you want. Today I will be talking again with a dear friend, a caring goofball and wicked smart pro dom, sex positive educator, and the chief learning officer of Cliff Media, Hazel Havoc. Previously we talked with Hazel Havoc and her husband about their journey in sex work and porn, and today we will be talking with Hazel about another really critical topic around boundaries in kink and porn, which this woman has a lot of really smart ideas about how to handle a critically important and often very tricky conversation that happens in all kinds of sexual situations. So, Hazel, can you tell us about the very first time you negotiated a kink scene?
Yeah. The first time. Yeah. So the very first time, it was with this human, Sasha, who I was sure was far more experienced than me in every way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I gotta level up my game. I gotta come with my A game, because they have this ton of experience.
Mm-hmm. So you were feeling some intimidation.
I was, and I didn't want to fall short, right? Mm-hmm. Little did I know, when I found out months and months later, after Sasha and I became dear friends, they told me that they felt the same way about me. They felt just as intimidated, which I was like, oh my goodness. So one thing that I brought in with me, so I went and did research, right? Mm-hmm. Right. I had my own questions on what I know I needed to ask about, right? Mm-hmm. Things about the body, things about how they felt that day, things about experience. But I knew I wanted to go deeper than that, mm-hmm. right? And so I started to research what are other questions that people ask within BDSM for boundaries, for general scenes. Yeah. And one thing that I found through a local dungeon here in Portland called Sub Rosa were these scene negotiation prompts. And they had these out for the community. Uh-huh. And they have such great resources for the community in general. Mm-hmm. They do workshops and all kinds of stuff there. Mm-hmm. So they're a great resource. And this scene negotiation card is something I actually took with me. Mm-hmm. So I have my notebook of all of my questions, and then I brought this with me.
Folks who are listening, she has a business card with little tiny print on both sides.
Yeah, and you can tell it's very used, right? Mm-hmm. This is traveling.
You brought it
with
you
me.
To a yes. variety of kink experiences.
This has been in my bag. It has traveled with me. Yes. I use it. I refer to it. Mm-hmm. And even now, because I've been doing scene negotiations for a long time now, and I do them pretty frequently, and there are times where I still refer back to this to be like, okay, that's right, I need to ask about that, I need to make sure to hit on this. Mm-hmm. So if they're good, it's a good refresher. Mm-hmm. So even when, it's good for when you're just beginning, but it's also good for when you're experienced too, because, I mean, it puts in here stuff like remembering to ask about STI and testing status. Mm-hmm. There are times where I've worked with somebody so frequently that I feel like I know them and I feel like I know this stuff, but and so I forget to ask. But mm-hmm. asking about STI and testing status is a good thing to remember to ask somebody.
That's such a good lesson. That's maybe when you're first interacting with someone or you're nervous and new to kink in general, mm-hmm. you take the card, but then you're like, oh, I'm confident, I got it. But actually you're suggesting throughout your experience in kink, with anyone, that you're constantly checking back on those basics.
Yeah, because the basics are important, right? Mm-hmm. It tells you, do you have an emergency plan? Do you have an aftercare plan, mm-hmm. right? And those are important things, because your emergency plan can change depending on who you're working with. Mm-hmm. So do I have a general emergency plan? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do I have an emergency plan specifically for this human based on their care and their needs? Mm-hmm. I need to make sure that I do.
Yeah.
Especially if I know that person has a medical need or medical something involved, then my emergency plan needs to change.
Right. It reminds me of the scene that we did yesterday with Cliff Media, where we had a nurse who was a videographer who had people's medicine stuffed in between her boobs. She was ready for it. And so
she was ready.
I remember also you told me once that sometimes you ask people if they have health insurance in case you need to take them somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, because you never know if something is going to come up or some health emergency is going to arise. Mm-hmm. If somebody has a health emergency, then I need to know how to respond to that. And I am not, I'm not a nurse, right? I am trained in CPR and first aid, but okay. that is the extent of my medical expertise and knowledge.
Yeah.
So as far as administering medicines or administering things like that, I don't know that. But if I can communicate that information to a medical professional,
yeah.
that's going to help the person that I'm with get care faster.
Mm-hmm.
If I know that this is an asthma attack or that you have a history of asthma, then I can call, I can say they're having an asthma attack. Or if I know where your inhaler is, or if we have that available, then we can, you know, they can attend to the medical pieces that we need to.
Yeah. So I know your card has a long list. What are some of the other things that you and Sasha talked about or that you typically talk about? Mm-hmm.
So what I love about this is it divides it out into categories. So
okay.
it has like history and it gets into basically like your own personal history. And there's
mm-hmm.
questions that go into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets into readiness. How ready are you for
mm-hmm.
this scene?
Mm-hmm.
Not only mentally ready, but physically ready.
Yeah.
It gets into basically like the future. What's going to happen in the future? If there, do you have an emergency plan? Do you have aftercare? So future stuff. Then you go through your scene outline, right? You go through any sort of reminders. So those are reminders of like your safe words. And that is such a big thing too. So often I hear people say things like, I forgot what my safe words were, right? Which like hurts my heart.
Yes. I once did a scene, a porn scene, paid by someone who, he had me in shackles and it was a tickle scene, and he told me what my safe word should be. I was saying it repeatedly, and he said, oh, I forgot it. Like, as the person who is doming, you can't forget the
no,
safe word.
You cannot forget the safe word. You cannot forget it. And so to hear people on any side of the slash say that they're forgetting that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big red flag.
Yeah.
So having like, you know, a reminder that these are your safe words. This is how you do this. And sometimes when you get in the flow, sometimes you get in autopilot when you're doing these sort of negotiations,
yeah.
and especially if it's somebody you've worked with for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I have done that with people that I've worked with for a long time. I have forgotten to do reminders
mm-hmm.
on what safe words were because I just sort of assume that they know. Even though sometimes we never use them.
Because uh-huh. you have that understanding, the trust built. Too. Yeah.
yeah. But
yeah.
then I think about it and I'm like, we've talked about safe words maybe twice.
Uh-huh.
We've worked together, you know, a dozen or more times. They've never used it. Like, of course they don't remember. Like,
yeah.
education tells us that if we don't use it, we lose it.
True. Yes. Yes, that's true for learning languages and safe words.
So.
Do you use those universal, like, red, green, yellow safe words? Do you have other ones, too?
Yeah. So there is one other one that I use, which is maybe my most favorite safe word of all time. So red, yellow, and green are ones that I use pretty much universally with people because
mm-hmm.
They're so easy to use.
Yeah.
With clients that I've worked with for a really long time,
mm-hmm.
There's a safe word that we use that's sort of like end scene.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at my, because we work with
mm-hmm.
boundaries, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of the clients I work with, we push boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we use red
mm-hmm.
as like we're really getting into the boundaries, but we don't want to stop.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so we sort of change what that definition is. And so the word that we use beyond that is hallelujah.
We've reached the pinnacle. No more need to go
yes.
on.
Hallelujah. I am done.
Yes, yes.
Hallelujah.
And the thing I love about that is it's like the safe word is not I'm communicating to you that you did something bad. It's just I'm finished.
Yeah.
I have been fulfilled. This is all that I need.
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah. So the safe word beyond red that I've used is hallelujah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we remind people of that too. And I use that, like I said, with clients I've worked with for a long time or over a period of time.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the one we'll use.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the ones that we use. So reminders of those
mm-hmm.
are really important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about like this card, right? And okay, one thing I love that always makes me laugh, right? There's a reminder on this to go to the bathroom, go pee. Right?
It's useful to go pee before you get tied up for now.
Yes. Go
yes.
to the bathroom.
Yes.
Go
yes.
to the bathroom.
Yes. Unless it's explicitly a water sports scene, you're probably
yes.
not wanting to go there.
Yes. Go pee first. On both,
yes.
like
yes.
everybody involved. Did
True.
You pee?
Yeah.
Just really basic things right there. And then it gets into how much and, like, what kind.
Uh-huh.
And so that is really into, like, how much nudity do you want? How much pain do you want? How intense do you want it? And what kind? Do you want nudity just below the waist? Do you want, full nudity?
Yeah.
You know?
I love redefining sex, that it doesn't necessarily mean that you're completely naked and you're putting a body part in another body part. Like, it can be all kinds of things,
yeah,
and you're negotiating that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so things change,
yeah,
each time. And so to check in with that, each time you're doing a scene with somebody, though, I think that is the important one right there, to check in each time, how much, what kind, because that's going to change.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I love about what you're describing is that, yes, it's for kink, but also it has implications for all kinds of sex. And I hear, for example, a lot of people saying, like, we don't want to talk about sex in advance because that takes away the mystery and the sensuality of it. We just want it to, like, the chemistry flowing and it just happens. But I think about, like, for example, recently I'm having sex with someone who was pulling my hair really hard, and I like it, usually, but sometimes I don't want my hair pulled for, like, 15 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
And that's a situation where I can imagine, even though it's vanilla sex, like, yellow would have been nice, had we had that conversation before.
Yeah.
But so that's not often a, like, people going on a date to dinner and then they're like, let's come home and get out our spreadsheet, right?
Yeah.
So how do you negotiate that almost awkwardness sometimes in navigating boundaries in sexual interactions with people?
Yeah, like particularly in your personal life. Yeah, those conversations are, one, I think, can be hard because they're vulnerable conversations. And they're vulnerable conversations even professionally, right? Because you're really talking about, what do you want?
Yeah.
And so often, I think, when we're talking about, particularly women, are really taught to talk about what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So to talk about what we do want in the positive,
yeah,
that, I think, is hard to do and a very vulnerable thing for somebody to do. And that's why I think sometimes having those conversations, it is really just about, one, taking the plunge,
yeah,
and starting with a question that is really sort of kind of like vanilla-y. Like, you can come back to, like, some of these things on this card, right? Like, what kind of touch do you want tonight? How is your body feeling tonight?
Yeah.
And these are kind of sexy questions,
yes,
too. They don't have to be this sort of business type of thing. It could
right,
be,
right,
you know, does it feel good when I stroke your arm,
uh-huh,
you know, from your shoulder to your elbow?
Uh-huh.
I just did that.
I didn't even ask if
I could touch you.
You asked me that in the past. So I think that's an example.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, or to ask, like, you know, do you want your hair pulled tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Can I pull your hair? To ask those questions that can be, one, consent-based,
yeah,
and then, two, about how your body feels and what you want that night,
yeah,
can also be really hot.
Yeah.
And so to find a way to do that can be a really sexy way to do that, particularly with an intimate partner.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I'm hearing that might be scary for some people but useful is, like, if someone's asking, do you want me to touch you from your shoulder to your elbow? How does that feel? I think there's an impulse to be like, yes, I want it, just to please the other person,
mm,
even if that's not actually what you want, but, like, being able to cultivate the space together where you understand that not wanting that particular thing doesn't mean you don't want that person.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the thing and the person and trying to tease out that rejection piece,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm,
where having those talks beforehand,
mm,
can really help,
yeah,
because then it becomes less about the person and more about the act,
mm-hmm,
right? We're talking about, what kind of touch do we want?
Yeah.
Not about, do I want you?
Yeah.
Like, that answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I want you.
Yeah.
I want you to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how I want you to do them.
Yeah.
Here's how it feels good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And not saying that something feels, like, bad, just something might feel better,
yeah,
or something might feel more like a turn on, right? Saying, I like it when you suck on my nibbles, I like it better when you bite them.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the things that was really powerful about the scene that you and Lila, another one of the directors with Click Media,
yeah,
directed yesterday, where you had the people who were bottoming write in Sharpie on their bodies what they wanted. It wasn't like, don't fuck my ass. It was like, if someone didn't want the ass, then they wrote, fucked my pussy hard.
Yeah.
So it gave the top something to do rather than just a don't interact with me in that way. It's like more life affirming.
Yeah. Talking about the things you want in the positive makes it less about rejection.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're not saying no to something. You're saying, this is what I do want.
Yeah.
Go ahead and do this. Like one thing, like in my personal life, I don't really always love like giving blowjobs. That's not something I always love doing. And so I talk about the things that I do want to do. Right? And then here's this list of things that are possible in the realm of things I do want to do. And so then it becomes less about what you don't want and more about what you do.
So if someone is having a personal intimate interaction, that I can imagine it's different than pro Dom Hazel Havoc sitting someone down for a negotiation conversation before a scene. In that intimate space, what do you think are some of the core key questions that people, what are the top things that people need to handle?
Yeah. So one thing to handle that it's super vulnerable and can be very scary to start with. I know for me, when I am going into those conversations in my personal life, I always feel the butterflies in my stomach because I'm about to talk about things that I want, and that can feel very scary. In my professional world, you know, that's part of like my job. You know, so there's a level of professionalism that goes in that.
Yeah.
And so one of the armors that I sort of bring with me in my personal life is that professionalism, right? Trying to bring this level of professionalism to this conversation that feels so open and vulnerable, because it makes me feel a little bit safer. So that's one of the things that I try to do. But in the personal realms, establishing boundaries around what you do want and what you don't want. And sometimes you don't know, especially if you're new to it. So that's where sticking with maybe something, one thing that you want to try, and going with the one thing and trying to figure out those boundaries in that realm. I remember the first couple times I worked in my personal life, there were some disasters in communication. And so knowing that that can happen, right? Knowing that you can try to have these conversations and you can feel really good about the conversations and still have things go sideways. And that's okay. And you can still, like, in the middle of, I remember one time in my personal life, the idea was that we were going to, you know, have this sort of like dom scene where he was going to dominate me, which always feels very unnatural to me, but I was like, okay, I'm going to double give it a try. And it got to this point where I felt panicky, like giving over that control at that moment that he was demanding it felt so scary to me. Like I needed to call time out in the middle of the scene. Cause I was like, I can't do this. Like, I'm done. Like my head is so far out of the game. I don't feel even sexual anymore. Because it came, him demanding the level of control was not something I was willing to give. And so recognizing that, and I didn't know I would get there until we were in the scene.
So that was like the part. That takes a level of bravery to be in that scene where you are trying to have a sexual connection with someone, but you hit a wall where it didn't feel good anymore. And I can imagine that some people would feel like, well, I've started this, I should push through, I should finish, I don't want to disrespect this person. But then it could get to a place of like, is there even, like, is it bringing up trauma? Is it having a negative impact to last? But you, so like, you had that moment of expressing your boundary, even though it was really uncomfortable and was in a, like, sexual acts going on.
Yeah, and it was scary to do, but I knew that it was necessary. And it's like we were in, this was an intimate relationship that I was in. And so it felt like I need to be able to say something. I need to be able to, you know, shut this down and say no. And that whole thing was, it felt vulnerable. The whole thing felt vulnerable.
The other thing that I was hearing about approaching, like, one thing, push the boundary, see how it goes, is that there's some play in there, that it's not necessarily like you're trying to reach an endpoint. Or you have a scripted plan. It's like negotiating some exploration together.
Yeah. When I work with people and to push boundaries, the idea is that we're playing. That we're playing in the upper realms of where their boundaries are. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to discover where new boundaries are. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to push old boundaries.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point of it. Mm-hmm. Sort of play in the ways that we do that.
Yeah.
One example, I worked with this client. And usually we go so hard because he's a deep masochist. I think we've discussed he's a dear client of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But usually we go really hard, deep masochism.
Yep.
And then one time we wanted to play some boundaries. And so one thing we added was silence. Everything had to be
Whoa.
Silent.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
Not only did he have to be silent, the tools that I used had to be more or less silent,
mm-hmm.
which that ruled out a lot of tools, because paddles make a lot of sound, everything makes a lot of sound, floggers make a lot of sound.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the sensation had to be this sort of like stuff that we could dig into the skin. I think you've seen my paddle that
yeah.
has the shells
yeah.
on
oh.
it.
Oh.
We
I love and hate that so much.
Like we use fur, we use nails, and we use all these different tools,
yeah,
and we
yeah.
had to get really creative in how we used it. We used clothespins, a lot of clothespins,
mm-hmm.
And played at boundaries
yeah.
that we don't usually play in
yeah.
because usually silence is not something we have as a boundary.
Yeah.
And what he told me later is that it made everything more intense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because everything had to be silent,
yeah.
It made everything he was experiencing feel way more intense.
Okay.
Which felt really cool.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel like that's an example of where if you're not exploring these questions around what is it you're going to do, deciding to be silent isn't a thing that would naturally come
yeah.
up in just kind of doing whatever feels right for the day. Like, you all had to have that conversation and decide, we're going to do this creative
yeah.
thing today.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And some of it, too, can be just natural things that come up.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I've been working with clients, and there have been just natural boundaries. Like, we share a wall with a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
we can't use things that are super loud.
Mm-hmm.
Or, the environment just, makes it happen. So, like,
yeah.
I have really long floggers. So, if we have ceilings that are really short,
mm-hmm.
it makes it so we can't usually do my long floggers. And so we have to change things up. And we have to talk about the environment and how that can change or impact what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever experienced seen a moment where someone's boundaries were violated, where that negotiation conversation ended up not working out?
Yeah. So one of these happened, like, actually in my personal life, where we had conversations. The idea was to go out, and the idea was, that I would have a blindfold on and that he would basically be my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a moment where I was pretty sure, because condom use at this time was something that was going to be required.
And this was in a gangbang setting at
yeah.
a club? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So condom use was going to be required, and so he was going to be my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this moment where I was pretty sure, because something, a transition happened just way too fast.
Yeah.
Like, from oral to penetration,
yeah.
and it was just way too fast. And I was like...
And you were thinking in this moment, like, your brain was there, but you couldn't respond to it because you didn't have eyes.
Yeah, so I had no eyes.
Yeah.
So I'm trusting that this human is behind
oh,
me, watching,
right.
What's going on. But then
there's so much trust.
There's so
yeah.
much trust. But this transition happened really quick, and it just made me wonder,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes you out of the moment,
yeah.
right? It
yeah.
takes you out of the moment, it takes you into your mind,
mm-hmm.
And takes you sort of out of any sort of level of subspace that you might be experiencing,
yeah.
because now you're wondering,
mm-hmm.
And this trust is like, what just happened for sure?
Yeah.
And since I wasn't sure, like, I let the scene progress, and then afterwards is when we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, like, this happened, and I'm just not really sure,
yeah.
Like, what was going on. And so I just told him, like, what my experience was.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't have eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so because I didn't really have proof, I could just talk about what my experience was. That's all I could do.
Yeah.
So I said to him, I was like, this is what I thought. This was my experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't stop the scene. I knew I could have. I didn't. I made that choice in the scene. And that was a choice I was willing to live with. I knew had I stopped the scene, I could have done that. Anyway, so we're talking afterwards, and one thing that he communicated was that he was unaware that one thing that I wanted was for him to be watching the whole time.
But you had trusted him. Like, there wasn't times when you had the blindfold off and it was okay for him to look away.
Yeah.
He was your eyes.
Yes, he was my eyeballs. And I thought I had been very clear about that.
Yeah.
And one thing that my partner kind of laughed about when he was looking at this text message exchange, he was like, man, I know what it's like to date a dude now.
Because often men are not socialized, or at least normative male masculinity is not conditioned to be really concerned about negotiating boundaries. And so, yeah, like it's a thing that we're learning together.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that I heard from your description is that you wanted to go into some space, but you were drawn out of that when you lost the trust. And so actually being able to trust someone and having those kink negotiation conversations that you know are going to be listened to is sexier.
Yeah.
You can go deeper.
Yeah. It's way hotter because then you can trust people more.
Yeah.
And so like when you're talking about these kink discussions, you want to only agree to things you know that you can follow through on and things that you clearly understand. So if you are negotiating something and you're agreeing to something,
mm-hmm.
you need to be clear about what you're agreeing to.
Yeah.
And that part can be sexy and hot too. And sometimes even when you think you're being really clear, there can be miscommunication, like what happened with me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't think that I needed to say to this other human, I need you to watch the entire time.
Right.
I made this assumption that I said, hey, I'm going to be wearing a blindfold. I need you to be, you know, aware and watching.
Yeah.
Right. Which is how I phrased it, which I thought was clear enough. But this is, again, why my partner was like, I feel like I understand. But I made an assumption that we understood the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think trying to be overly clear in these conversations is always helpful. Like when you're talking about erring on the side of caution,
mm-hmm.
erring on the side of being more clear is going to be better.
More communication is better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I know that right now we're discussing in the context of personal life and play and also some like pro-dom and BDSM kink.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we can also talk about porn, that thing that lots of people watch, and yet there's the stereotype that it's exploitative, that maybe girls get into it because they're initially attracted or even drawn in by the money, but then it turns out that they're actually just being used in a terrible way by the male performers or the male-run companies. And I think that is true sometimes in some cases, and then there are also ways that people are exploring porn that's more consent-driven,
mm-hmm.
That it's not inherent to the act of performing that someone is just used without their consent. And so I'm wondering, you know, you have a lot of experience in lots of different capacities through Click Media and through your pro-dom work and others. What have you seen that does and doesn't work in terms of promoting a positive consent-driven porn?
Yeah. So one thing I used to do, I used to have a group of people that we got together. We called it Havoc's Den. It was so fantastic. And one thing we always talked about before we did any sort of shooting or scenes was basically these questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
About what do we want today? Where is our consent? What are we consenting to, not consenting to?
Mm-hmm.
And so we had those conversations and we made it part of our routine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became normative is
mm-hmm.
what it did.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I would suggest is while the initial times you have these conversations, it might seem awkward and kind of weird,
mm-hmm.
have them,
mm-hmm.
because if you start making them a normal part of your like sexual life,
mm-hmm.
it just becomes easier.
Yeah.
So that's one thing we did with Havoc's Den, and we just we'd get together in a group and we'd sit before we started each time, and we've done this too, like with Cliff Media, right?
Mm-hmm.
And before we start with shooting, we sit down and we talk about what are our hell no's and our fuck no's for the day. And I think I think every time I've been in especially like a group scene,
mm-hmm.
there has been some sort of formal time where people sit down and talk about basically what are their hell yeses and their hell no's.
Mm-hmm.
whether it was, you know, with me and Have Extend or with Cliff Media, when I sit down and do it with people professionally, and like in my personal life, you know, what do I really want today? What am I not looking forward to today? Or what am I not really wanting? What am I not looking forward to? I'm not really looking forward to doing this thing.
You know, one of the things that I hear that's really different from even, so I have worked with a variety of porn producers who, some are really good about sending kind of a list of sex acts, and you go through and you check, yes, that's okay, maybe, and no. But what is different from what I'm hearing about the way that you're describing it is you're not asking just what is okay, you're asking what do you want, what is really interesting and desirable to you for today.
Yeah, because that's really what we want to get into. We want to get in, what do people want to do, mm-hmm. right? What are the really the fuck yeses? That's mm-hmm. what we want to know.
Yeah.
What do you really want to do? What are those desires, the absolute wants? Because that's what we want to do, right? Those are the areas we want to play in.
Yeah.
Not in the like, maybe that'd be okay. I mean, unless you're playing with boundaries and that's a boundary, but if you're not excited about it,
yeah.
I don't want to do something that you're not excited about.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking, and this is kind of feeds back to the podcast we did on energy play, right?
Yeah.
Like your energy is going to play into my energy. And so if your energy is feeling blasé about what it is that we're doing,
mm-hmm.
like, I'm going to feel that from you.
Yeah.
And I don't want to feel blasé
during a sex scene. It's not empowering to everybody.
No,
yeah.
That's not going to feel good to me. I want to feel the energy that says, fuck yes.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yes. One of the things that we have talked about in Cliff Media is that this is just, you know, messy. You described one of the examples where, you know, your boundaries were maybe violated. Certainly it wasn't what you expected.
Yeah.
So when people are experiencing this, when they're trying really hard to express their boundaries, whether it's in porn or whether it's in kink or in the BDSM scene or whatever, how do you handle it when your boundary may have been violated or some squishy thing that wasn't quite right happened?
Yeah. So one, I think it takes some acknowledgement that your boundary could have been violated, which I think can be hard. It can be hurtful, right? Especially depending on who or what violated your boundary.
Yeah.
I remember talking with a good friend of mine, and they were talking about boundary violations that happened at a club,
mm-hmm.
And the repercussions that were happening from that. Because sometimes boundary violations happen with people that you don't really know. They could be a relative stranger,
mm-hmm.
And maybe they don't know the boundary, but it's still a boundary violation. If it happens like in an intimate partnership, right, that can be a really big struggle.
Yeah.
And so having one, being able to say this was my boundary,
mm-hmm.
and this is how it was violated,
yeah.
That is a brave thing to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've had that pre-negotiation,
mm-hmm.
it makes it a little bit easier to go back to, because you can say, hey, do you remember when we talked about X, Y, and Z before we started? This is what happened. This was my experience. And I think that's what I try to do.
Yes.
And it's difficult, but really sticking with what was your experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't become about them and what they did. It becomes about what your experience was, what you expected, and what actually happened.
Yeah.
And then how you felt during that experience.
It's a very empathetic approach to it, even maybe nonviolent communication where you are talking about I statements. I felt this, I experienced this. And that you are not necessarily applying guilt and shame to someone having that people should not be violating boundaries, but sometimes it's an ignorance or a misunderstanding,
mm-hmm.
and so you're opening the space to grow
mm-hmm.
together rather than saying, why did you do this thing to me?
Yeah.
It's an opportunity to
yeah.
get better together about negotiations.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully also honoring the fact that you need something to manage your personal
yes.
experience out of violation.
Yes, and because there needs to be some follow-up to that too,
yeah.
right? Because
mm-hmm.
like you said, lots of times, at least I have found, it's not like people are violating boundaries purposefully.
Yeah.
Lots of times people do it either accidentally or because they didn't know something was a misunderstanding, it was
mm-hmm.
unclear,
mm-hmm.
and so it requires a conversation. Because ultimately, a boundary violation is a trust violation.
Yes.
And so you have to do some trust rebuilding, right? what part of trust was broken. And this part, it was a boundary.
Yeah.
And so what do you need to feel safe again?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so then you have to have those conversations. And so it can be difficult. It's a vulnerable thing to do.
Yeah.
But if you're going to navigate into the kink world or even into the polyamory world,
yeah,
it's going to require vulnerability.
Yeah.
People think that it's so easy.
You just walk in and yeah, meet someone.
So easy. You just go have all these relationships with people. But it's hard, and it requires a vulnerability and a trust.
Yeah.
And it requires hard conversations. Conversations about boundaries, conversations about boundary violations. And sometimes it's not even a violation, sometimes it's just like a gray area. You're approaching a boundary and you're like, whoa, warning. And you have to have a conversation about that. That this is coming up for you.
Yeah.
And I think, again, sticking with what is happening for you in your experience,
yeah,
is the best way to do that. And there have even been times where it's been the opposite, where I've been working professionally with people, and the person I was working with was violating some of my boundaries, where we had talked about communication in our relationship, like what that was going to look like, how often communication needed to happen, and that level of communication kept being pushed. And the frequency of communication was being pushed. The demands and what was being asked during communication was being pushed. And so I needed to then reaffirm, hey, this is what we talked about. And so having the conversation so you can go back and pull to it and say, hey, remember when we talked before, like about communication and how often?
Yes.
I just want to make sure that we're clear. Like, this is what I need for communication. And going back to those conversations is
expressing,
helpful.
I need it. Not like this is a universal thing and you're a bad human. It's I need this thing. Let me take care of myself by expressing this boundary to you. I have a contract with someone, and like it was a relationship contract form in the beginning, but it's like fun to go back to that Google Doc.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I'm hearing is that, you know, you were describing that boundaries can shift during a scene. So, for example, I have a partner who is kind of into, like, hell yes, wants to explore humiliation play, where I'm saying some things that are degrading in a loving way, but also is aware that, like, that might trigger some things.
Yeah.
And so in the moment, having to pause and be like, I need affirmation, I need to, like, step back from this, even though he thought that was a hell yes boundary at the beginning.
Yeah. It's funny that you say humiliation, because humiliation is definitely one of the things on this card, of what kind is humiliation.
Yeah.
Checking in with humiliation each time, because humiliation changes of how much you want of it and what kind of humiliation you want can change from each experience to each experience.
Yeah.
So being familiar with that and knowing that humiliation in particular can really trigger some things for people is an important piece.
Yeah, because kink brings up not just sexual experiences, but all kinds of life experiences, the way you were talked to as a child, the way that you have navigated other intimate relationships.
Yeah.
And I also hear you saying that it's this vulnerability in these conversations, which actually is a form of emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
You are sharing a almost secret part of yourself with someone, like a gift of communicating that.
Yeah. I think that when you're engaging in BDSM and kink, you're engaging in a lot of emotional intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some ways impossible not to build some level of intimacy with the people that you're doing it with, whether it's a professional relationship or in your intimate relationship. I think it actually enhances intimacy because you have these conversations that a lot of people just normally don't have.
Yeah.
Like, even if you have a vanilla sex life, right? If you're talking about how much sex do you want on a normal basis, like on an everyday basis, how much is too much? How much is not enough? If you're talking about, like, how much nudity do you want? Like, sometimes, like, even my personal life, I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to be naked today. Like, whatever. We can just, like, keep clothes on. Like, sometimes I'm feeling insecure about my body,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Because
we're not the same person every day. We go through different things. We feel different things.
Yeah. Like, I remember after I had my kid, I didn't want to be naked a lot. Like, I just, and there's also, like, I didn't really want, like, my boobs touched a lot. Like, it's just that, and that was That was just how it was after that. Yeah. But those things change over time.
Yeah.
So checking in with those things is, I think, a really important piece. And it builds intimacy, I think, within not only intimate couples, but within any people who are engaging in these conversations.
Yes, yes. And all kinds of things. I love the idea of exploring kink to just the whole relationship and sex. It's like, how often do you want to meet? How often do you want to have sex? How often do you want to text and communicate?
Uh-huh.
People often are just exploring this kind of as you go, but being able to be very clear, knowing what you want.
Yeah.
And I feel like wanting something and knowing and honoring that it's okay to want something for yourself is a big theme in here. That it's, what do you really want sexually or emotionally or out of this relationship?
Yep. Yeah, and even if what you come up with, what you really want at that moment, is to do something to make the other person happy, that is an okay thing.
Mm-hmm.
If all you can think is, I want to do the things that make you happy, that can be a place to start.
Sure.
Yeah. And then, you know, it kind of leaves it up to the other person to be like, okay, this is something I would desire.
Uh-huh.
But you can start there. And when you're talking about boundaries and all the things, right, that reminds me of this thing called the relationship smorgasbord.
Yes, I love it. Tell
so
us.
Fantastic. It's like, you look at it, and it's this smorgasbord of, like, things that a relationship can provide, right? Intimacy, kink, you know, domestic companionship, partnership. I mean, there's so many things on the smorgasbord. But what it does is it provides you a tool, basically a non-emotional tool, to talk with your partner about, like, what are the boundaries in our relationship and the needs in our relationship that our relationship provides. And that we look for in this relationship. And so you can go through all the things on the smorgasbord, like, do you depend on that relationship for financial stability? Do you do you depend on that relationship for like emotional cuddling and emotional intimacy? Because not all relationships do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a ton of relationships that I do not depend on for financial stability.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of relationships that I do not depend on for cuddling and intimacy,
mm-hmm.
because the boundaries in those relationships look different.
Yeah.
So knowing that, and then you can go back and you can have another tool, either when those boundaries need to shift, or when a boundary has either been violated or there's sort of a gray area that keeps coming up.
It seems like, I know this comes out of the poly world where you have people choosing which relationships meet these different needs, but I imagine that it's useful even in the monogamous situation where people are choosing what kind of relationship they want to get into, may not actually want to get married, may not want to live together, may not want financial integration. But still want emotional intimacy or sex or cuddling or whatever. And so being able to choose those things is really useful.
Yeah.
Hazel, what I am hearing is that people who want to get into kink dynamics, who want to have these deep conversations or deepen their intimacy and kink in their partnership or in their relationships, need a binder with a list of questions, some forms to fill out the relationship forms. Let's just—it's going to be a how-to guide that you all can fill out with Cliff University of Non-Traditional Psychology.
Yes.
Soon we'll get that out there. Yes, but really, like that nerdy stuff.
Yeah,
it matters. Like that is sexy as fuck that you bring that to kink.
Yes, I have a binder. So
she's not kidding.
I have a binder. I do legit have a binder. It has questions. And in my binder, too, it talks about, like, aftercare and foreplay, too.
Nice,
because that's
yes.
another thing that you want to negotiate, too. Not just what happens during, but what are you going to do in the aftercare? What are you going to do for foreplay?
Yeah.
What does foreplay look like for you? Do you like sexy text messages? You know, what do you want?
Yeah.
What do you want? It's all about what you want.
What do you want? So I encourage you to spend some time tonight, tomorrow, whenever you have some time to yourself, to think about what you really want. It reminds me of recommendations of if you are trying to figure out how to have someone pleasure you, to pleasure yourself so you can learn. So maybe spending some time thinking about, like, how do I own it to express my boundaries so I can not only not experience assaults or violations, but have a really good, deep top space or subspace or kink or relationship or whatever intimacy it is that you're looking for, to know what you want, be able to communicate that.
Yeah, and I would say one thing you asked before about, like, one thing to do when you're starting to have these conversations is set a time and a date to have it.
Schedule that on the calendar.
Yeah. Don't spring it on your partner. Don't just like over dinner be like, hey.
So I have a binder here.
Yeah, I got the binder.
Here's your broccoli. Here's the relationship smart board.
Yeah. Don't spring it on them.
Yeah.
You know, tell them you want to talk about boundaries. You want to talk about your, you know, your intimacy and your sex life and the kink world, whatever, however you want to do. But set a time and date to talk about it so that your partner, too, has the same amount of opportunity to think about it and tell them what you want to talk about and be open about that. So, again, they can come to the table just as prepared to talk about the things that you want to talk about. Better discussions that way.
Yes. Well, I had a partnership with someone and we wanted to schedule how much sex we're having. So we put on the Google Calendar, going to Disneyland Thursday night. Disneyland was in the bed, but that way we knew.
Yeah.
And so scheduling that, but for those conversations, those kink conversations, relationship conversations that allow for a sexier, more consent-driven sex life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much
for all
your guidance on kink in personal life and in professional life, in porn, and all the things, because it is way sexier when we're getting the sex that we really want.
That's true. That's true.
So thank you, listeners, also for joining us. This has been another edition of A Slut's Guide to Happiness with your host, Vanessa Cliff, and our amazing pro-dom and smart woman, Hazel Havoc.
Thank you.
You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple and Spotify, as well as on VanessaCliff.com. Please like and share this podcast to help us get the message of slut-positive community and whole life out there. And stay tuned for more deep dives into beautiful, messy, and fun waters. If you're over the age of 18, you can check out our video content, including lots of us and lots of other amazing queer women and powerful people who are coming together in beautiful community to love our bodies on our website, VanessaCliff.com. And most of all, I invite you to join us in the pleasure of being awkwardly human, naked, and without pretense. Let's get free.